It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. So a big day in Washington. The Senate just voted to declare Article 1 of the Mayorkas impeachment articles unconstitutional. The vote was 51-48, one senator voting present. Now, Republican senators are lining up to adjourn the Senate. We'll update you as soon as we get a new vote on the second and last article, or adjournment, or whatever comes. Meanwhile, House Speaker Mike Johnson has come up with a $95 billion five-part package for foreign aid funding and border control. And Mr. Johnson will be here in just a few minutes to talk about the whole story. Oh, and by the way, Fed head Jay Powell throws in the towel on rate cuts. There are not going to be any rate cuts, probably in my lifetime. We have Linda McMahon and Mike Falkender. They're down at the AFPI conference in Fort Worth, Texas. They'll be here in a second. And all that wasn't enough. We have Joe Concha, we have Mark Simone, we have Liz Peek, we have Kevin McCarthy. So strap in, everybody. This is going to be the most fun we've ever had. Let me start off with some new ground. Just want to make a couple points about the Mideast oil and so forth. European foreign ministers visiting Tel Aviv in order to persuade Prime Minister Netanyahu not to retaliate against the unprecedented Iranian bombings last Saturday. Of course, the Biden administration continues to pressure Israel to do nothing. And then along comes White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan with a statement yesterday, get this, announcing that new sanctions will be placed against Iran in the wake of the Israeli attack. And then the Sullivan announcement was pathetic, a complete non-event, a total nothing burger. He said that Biden is, quote, coordinating with allies and partners, including the G7, and with bipartisan leaders in Congress. All this on something called a comprehensive response. And then Sullivan added that in coming days, the U.S. will impose new sanctions targeting Iran. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, and Sullivan reminded us that in the last 3 years, the U.S. has sanctioned over 600 individuals and entities connected to terrorism. Really? So what? What sanctions were these except little tiny pieces of paper? Because the Bidens eased sanctions on Iran. Iran's oil production has gone from less than 1 million barrels a day in Donald Trump's last year to currently 3.2 million barrels per day. That according to a Reuters survey. The Bidens have done nothing to stop this. And although estimates do vary, Iran's stepped up oil trade could be worth as much as $100 billion to them. Of course, that's $100 billion funneled to their terrorist client states, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, at all attacking Israel. The Bidens haven't done a thing about this. No ships have been stopped. No impoundments. Who's Iran's biggest customer, by the way? China. According to ship tracking data from Vortexa, China bought an average of 1.05 million barrels per day of Iranian oil in the first 10 months of last year, 2023. This is 60% above pre-sanction peaks recorded by Chinese customs in 2017. 60% above. China's October imports from Iran are estimated to have reached about 1.45 million barrels a day. That's the highest monthly level ever, according to Vortexa. Well, ain't that something? What about all those sanctions? Our top adversary, China. Whoa, wait a minute. Our top enemy, China. China's also buying plenty of oil from Russia, violating those sanctions as well. And, of course, Iran is selling drone missiles to Russia, despite sanctions, raising even more money and fueling the Ukraine war as well as the Israeli war. Bidens, of course, have done nothing. Nothing. So why hasn't Joe Biden publicly chastised China for financing two wars against the United States through the illegal import of Russian and Iranian oil? Where's the public warning? I'm reading through a Reuters story today. It was dated yesterday, April 16th, that Iran's unprecedented missile and drone strike on Israel is, hold on, unlikely to prompt dramatic sanctions actions on Iran's oil exports from the Biden administration due to worries about boosting oil prices and angering top buyer China. Oh, my gosh. Angering top buyer China. I'm sure the Reuters story is right. All along, the Bidens have been worried more about gasoline prices than Israel's security, or for that matter, American security. If they'd reopened the fossil fuel spigots and drill, baby, drill, like Donald Trump argues, oil would be closer to $40 a barrel than today's $90. That could put Iran back into bankruptcy. But no, the Green New Deal is more important than protecting Israel. Oh, did I mention Mr. Trump? Well, one thing he taught me years ago was how to use tariffs for trade and non-trade purposes. Mr. Trump used the threat of massive tariffs on Mexico to get them to agree to a remain in border policy with 25,000 Mexican troops. I wonder, in order to cripple Iran and stop all this oil production and sales among rogue nations and American enemies, might Mr. Trump, that make that a president, Mr. Trump, tell China he's going to double the tariffs on every single one of your imports unless you stop buying Iranian oil? Might he put it out there in full public view, embarrass the Chinese, and then hammer home the tariffs? I think he might. You know what, folks? I'm going to go ask him. And that's my riff tonight. All right. Joining me now, we have Mike Felkinder, chief economist at America First Policy Institute, joining us in Fort Worth, Texas. We'll probably have Linda McMahon, chair of AFBI, joining us shortly. Felkinder, welcome down there in Texas. Let's see. We have some sound from Fed Chair Jay Powell. Take a listen to what he said.
The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it's likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence. That said, we think policy is well positioned to handle the risks that we face. If higher inflation does persist, we can maintain the current level of restriction for as long as needed.
All right. They've thrown in the towel, no rate cuts. That's my reading. Shouldn't have talked about it in the first place. What do you think, Mike Felkinder?
Well, Larry, it seems like yet again Jay Powell is late to the party. You know, he was very late in recognizing that inflation was coming in 2021 with all of the Biden spending that was going on. It took him forever to recognize that that inflation was not transitory. He eventually had to retire that word. And now he's finally recognizing that maybe interest rates alone are not going to calm markets and calm consumers when it comes to all of these price increases. Look, Larry, you and I have been talking for a long time that you cannot simultaneously have regulatory policy and fiscal policy throwing gasoline on a fire and then think that Jerome Powell's fire hose can dampen all of the inflation that those things are causing. You know, unless and until the Biden administration is going to switch gears, cut back on all the spending, including the student loan forgiveness that we've talked about, deregulate, particularly in the energy sector, and as you said, drill, baby, drill, there's every reason to believe that inflationary pressures are going to continue, which is why the market thinking 6 rate cuts earlier this year never made any sense. The market thinking we were going to get rate cuts in the first or second quarter of this year and Powell talking about 3 rate cuts this year. It's about time the Fed see that there's nothing changing to cut back on the inflationary pressures.
Well, basically, the CPI in the first quarter up 4.6% at an annual rate, 4.6. The Fed's target is 2. By the way, Jay Powell's so-called favorite core measure, this is all gobbledygook, but I'm going to read it anyway, core services CPI ex rents. What I don't even know what that means. I've been doing this stuff 50 years. But my point is that's up 8.2 at an annual rate. So whatever it is, it's almost 4 times the Fed's target. So he's finally throwing in the towel. I would also say the Hotlanta Fed GDP trackers said 2.9 in the first quarter. So the economy is very resilient. So there is no reason in this planet Earth for the Fed to ease interest rates. Otherwise, they would be accused of juicing the economy to reelect Joe Biden. They wouldn't want that accusation hurled at them, would they, Mike Falkinter?
Well, let me add on another number, which is that the jobs reports recently have not demonstrated the need for the Fed to try to curtail the rate levels that they're at right now. But no, I mean, why was Jerome Powell ultimately late to raising interest rates in the first place? You know, my view is that he was more concerned about getting reappointed than he was in actually being the Fed chairman. And so the idea that they're going to sell the American people that politics has played no role in Powell's management of the Federal Reserve, I think, is mistaken. Look at the extent to which Powell continued to monetize all of the excessive spending. The idea that back in the end of 2021 that they needed to still be buying mortgage-backed securities or engaged in quantitative easing when we had already largely recovered from the pandemic, inflation was surging, and yet Powell was more concerned about making sure that his nomination and confirmation went through. So I'm not at all surprised if he were to engage in some kind of I hope that he won't engage in a political act. But given the Powell's tenure, it would not surprise me if I saw politics playing a role in his interest rate management.
Oh, you're so mean. You know that? I thought you were a nice guy, Falkinter. You're so mean to Jay Powell. He's doing
well,
the
Larry,
best
more than anything, I try to be honest with you.
Oh, heck. There's a rumor that we have the great Linda McMahon here from Fort Worth Tech. There she is. The chairman, the chairperson of the America First Policy, former cabinet members, Small Business Administration. Hi, Linda. Welcome back. Linda, you're just in time. I'm going to play a nasty Joe Biden quote about the Trump tax cuts, the ones that completely failed across the board and only helped rich people. Here's Joe Biden talking about your tax cuts, Linda McMahon. Take a listen, please.
This Donald Trump embodies that failure. He wants to double down on trickle down. His failure starts with his $2 trillion tax cut that overwhelmingly benefited the wealthiest and biggest corporations and exploded the federal debt.
There you go. That's a little Bidenomics for you to make your day. You know, I would have thought, Linda, looking at the actual evidence, that virtually every person and every sector of the U.S. economy benefited from the Trump tax cuts, including middle-income people, low-income people, including a record-low poverty rate, including record-low unemployment rates for blacks, whites, Hispanics, women, young people. It's, you know, that's the numbers I read. National Bureau of Economic Research all confirming this kind of thing. But Joe Biden doesn't agree, Linda McMahon. You have a response?
Well, I do, you know, because the facts are clear. Just compare the Trump economy to his. We don't have to guess. It's not what Trump promises he'll do. It's what he already did. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act went into effect. And what happened? We know our economy grew. More small businesses started. There was great access to capital. Entrepreneurs were able to utilize parts of the tax cuts, like, you know, writing off their capital investment in the year that it was made. More businesses started. Take a look at the economy. It was flourishing. Until COVID hit, you know, we were just flourishing. And then coming out of COVID, because those policies were still in place, the economy started, as you quite, you know, accurately called it all the time, the V-shaped economy. It was on the way back. And that's what Biden came into, was that V-shaped economy. So the growth that we're seeing, the jobs that he is claiming to have created, really are a lot of those jobs coming back on the economy after COVID. So tax cuts do work. We had greater revenues, Larry. How many times have you told me that? Revenues went up under the tax cuts.
I didn't make it up. I'm just looking at the actual statistics of income from the IRS. Mike Falkinter, distinguished economist at Maryland University. I mean, those are the... Here's the last one, Linda McMahon. Joe Biden wants to raise taxes by somewhere between $4 and $5 trillion. Donald Trump wants to extend the Trump tax cuts, probably be worth a couple of trillion dollars, although it's going to pay for itself like it did. Which one's going to help the economy more, a $5 trillion tax hike or a tax cut? I ask you, Linda McMahon.
Well, Larry, that's just an easy, that's a layup question. You know the tax cuts are going to help the economy because we've shown it. We've shown it with Reagan. Hey, we showed it with Clinton even. And then when Trump came in, clearly tax cuts do increase revenues and the economy flourishes.
You would think, but then again, Mr. Biden doesn't think. Linda McMahon, thank you. Michael Falkenberg, thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
All right, folks, coming right up, House Speaker Mike Johnson very graciously agreed to come on. He's going to talk about his $95 billion five-part package. He's got foreign aid. He's got border control. And he's going to give us the scoop. We're very grateful for that. I'm going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with Speaker Johnson.
Next guest is kind of Forrest Gump himself, doing a bit of running across the country, across America to raise money for cancer. William Googe is his name, and he's here in person. Just finished the last leg in Central Park on Saturday. Did it in 55 days, 23 hours, and 51 minutes. Well done, my man.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Appreciate being here.
You're age 29. Your inspiration is unique. Mm-hmm. You lost your mom at age 23, and what did you do with that grief, William?
Well, I had to make it mean something. Like, cancer affects so many of us, one in two. I think everyone knows someone that's either battled cancer or passed away from it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, being 23, it was an interesting time in life where I could have made some other choices. But seeing her fight cancer the way she did and understanding that so many other people go through it, I couldn't make it mean just more than another sad story. Mm-hmm. She put so much goodness and strength in me just by seeing her do what she did and her actions. So, yeah, I took it to... I made running kind of my thing. It was my therapy.
And how did this trip come about? Why did you decide to do it this way?
So in 2019, I did my first big challenge running the length of the UK. And a very good friend of mine now, Robbie Ballinger, was actually running across the US when I decided I was going to do it. I was over here in LA. Someone said, you should follow this guy. I'd had no knowledge of ultra running, didn't know anyone that did it. So when I got told to follow this guy who was doing this run, I was obsessed. Like, he was the guy that taught me how to do everything. So when I finished that UK run, there was also a sign at Land's End, which is the most southwest part of the UK, and it says New York. And it was, I think it's very close to the distance I ran. So
at
that point, it was just like, I saw the sign, I was like, yeah. I guess that's next.
How many miles a day?
Average 55.
55? You're running two marathons a day. That's insane. You're trying to raise money. Mm-hmm. You have a GoFundMe page, right?
I do,
what is that?
You just have to search my name, William Googe, on GoFundMe. It'll be Will's Run Across America.
Okay, and Googe is G-O-O-D-G-E.
Yeah.
It's the right cause, so we want to make sure that gets out.
Thank you so much.
I'm just curious. I think our viewers would love to know, what did you think about America? What was your impression as you got a chance to go all across the country? Yeah. And did you ever hit any bad weather?
I loved it. It was so diverse. I mean... I did hit some diverse weather, but we were actually very lucky. As soon as I left New Mexico, there was a ton of snow. When I left Oklahoma, that's when the tornadoes came in. So I was very lucky. But, yeah, getting to see the country by taking each step is a very amazing thing to do because you can take it all in. And the kindness of strangers along the way, like we had our vans stickered up saying what we were doing. People would give cash donations. People would pull over at the side of the road, offer me, like, a sports drink or a water or a banana. Like, it's amazing what people will do even when they don't really know what you're doing. So
that's so cool. So Dana's from Colorado, I'm from Ohio. Which one do you like better?
Well, I ran through Ohio on this. I didn't Colorado, but yeah, Ohio was actually, I have to say, the nicest drivers. The nicest and the best drivers I found were in Ohio.
That?
Yeah, because I'm quite polite. I got brought up quite well, so I'm facing traffic as I run. Just for safety, I can see the cars coming. So I'll be like, thank you for going past. And rather than just like a finger up or no acknowledgement, I'd get like a wave. And I'd be like,
It's a real pleasure to meet you. Yeah. And thanks for inspiring us. And we hope that this GoFundMe page does very well. Will's Run Across America for
thank
Cancer.
You so much.
And thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Wonderful to have you.
Cool stuff. Thank you, Will.
Thank you.
To our viewers in Canada watching on Rogers, thanks for choosing Fox. For more, check us out at foxbusiness.com and foxnews.com.
Nobody.
The consumer is strong. The balance sheets are strong.
Brings you America's business news.
There's so much going on.
And what it means for you.
We want to get some breaking news to you right now. Fox Business Alert.
Like Fox Business, keeping you ahead of the curve.
All the insider selling by some of the richest people on earth.
With insight into the impact of U.S. and global markets.
That's where the recipe for inflation comes
from. The people you can trust.
Let's have some fun with this.
Fox Business, America's business network.
All right. Great honor. Joining us now is Speaker of the House, Mr. Mike Johnson, who's been gracious enough to come on the show. He's got himself a new package. It's a five-part package helping Israel, helping Ukraine, selling TikTok, closing the border, things like that. Mr. Speaker, I know you're a busy chap, and we do appreciate your coming on. I'm just going to let you start this for the next 30, 60 seconds. Tell us what you want to emphasize, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Professor Kudlow. Anytime you ask, I try to accommodate.
Yes, sir.
It's a busy day here. We've got a lot going on. This is a really important measure for the House. What we've done is we've taken the Senate supplemental bill, and we've improved the process and the policy, and that's a really important thing. What we've done, for example, on the Ukraine piece of this, is we've added the loan instrument concept. We've added the Repo Act, which, as everybody knows, is the seizure of corrupt Russian oligarchs' assets to be used to fund the effort in Ukraine. We introduced a lot of new accountability and oversight that Congress has a responsibility to do, and a strategy shift as well. We're going to require, within 45 days, the White House to deliver to Congress a meaningful plan. What is the end game here? What's the objective, and how are we going to accomplish this and bring this conflict to an end? By the way, Larry, on the Ukraine piece, 80% of what we'll spend here goes to America's industrial defense base, and that's a replenishment of our stocks and weapons, and I think that's a really, really important point. We're also adding sanctions against Russia, Iran, and all of our adversaries, including China. And that's a really important thing as well. So the House will do its will here. We'll have a rigorous amendment process to the underlying legislation. What a concept, Larry. Regular order, where every member gets to vote their own conscience. We'll begin with border, as you know, because the House Republicans have emphasized from day one, the day that President Biden took office, that the border must be secure. And he engineered its opening. He engineered the catastrophe. We've made that a part of the legislation this week as well, so we can put that flag in the ground one more time.
Well, it seems like it's all there, and congrats, at least in the development. I guess you vote on it when you vote on it. You know, Mr. Speaker, just one quick thought. I'm sure you didn't hear my riff because you were out doing something else. But I am so furious. The Bidens refused to lift a finger to sanction either Iran or China. Iran is selling China a record volume of oil exports. According to surveys, 1.5 million barrels per day. Overall, Iran is producing 3.5 million barrels per day. Donald Trump had bankrupted them back in 2019 and 2020, and the Bidens don't lift a finger. And I know it's not part of the legislation, but you know what? It just occurs to me every now and then. Somebody ought to say to China, you either stop buying this oil and financing this war against Israel and the United States, or we are going to double or even triple the tariffs on your exports to the U.S. That's something Trump would do if he were president. I mean, really put the wood to them the way the Bidens refuse to.
Absolutely. I spent last Friday with President Trump down at Mar-a-Lago, and we talked a lot about that. You know, he speaks of those things all the time. You got to be tough on your adversaries. The problem is, you and I both know, Larry, this president is projecting weakness on the world stage, and that's why all of the nations, our nation's enemies, are acting so provocatively. And for the Israel example, I mean, they've been, President Biden and Chuck Schumer have been criticizing Israel and appeasing Iran. The strategy should be exactly the opposite, that we should be helping Israel. And they've been turning their backs on them. And then, of course, this encourages Xi and encourages China. When they see that we're not going to stand strong and we're not going to put the flag in the ground, so to speak, and hold the line, they're going to act. They're going to move. We're concerned about what China may do in Taiwan. We talk about it all the time. We're certainly concerned about Iran's open aggression now against Israel, our dear friend and ally. And Russia, of course, is still on the march in Ukraine. We have to stand strong. A strong America is good for the entire world. We bring stability and peace. The perception that America is strong, is important, and has been since World War II, and we cannot let down on that responsibility.
Well, amen to that. So, Mr. Speaker, you know, I keep reading that some of your critics want to replace you because you're not dealing with the border. But my notes tell me that you are. This package has a border component in it. Remain in Mexico, Title 42. It's essentially the core piece of the original H.R. 2. You've also got Steve Miller's election integrity proposal with the voter ID component. And you talked to Trump the other day, last weekend, about the election integrity stuff. So the border's in here. Remain in Mexico. Title 42. I don't understand this whole business. They want to replace you as Speaker. I just wanted you to comment on it because it seems to me like you've got a full-fledged package here.
Well, look, we do. Some of my colleagues want the Speaker of the House to have a magic wand. If we could close the border ourselves, we would have done it a long time ago. We passed H.R. 2 over a year ago. It's sitting on Chuck Schumer's desk. That had all of the components. Close the border, change asylum processes and problems, end catch and release, and reinstate remain in Mexico. All the things that President Trump had done so effectively, Biden reflexively did the opposite, and that's been the problem. We passed resolutions, Larry. We passed the laws. They sit in Chuck Schumer's on his desk in the Senate because, again, the Democrats run the Senate. The Democrats run the White House, and they want an open border. That voter ID, the idea that you would have to prove that you're a U.S. citizen to vote in a U.S. Election, a federal election, is critically important. We're going to move that in the days ahead as well. That's what we were talking about at Mar-a-Lago at the press conference. But the American people demand this. They deserve it. We know the border is a catastrophe. And the reason that we're bringing to the floor this week the End the Border Catastrophe Act is because it's aptly named, and it describes what is on the hearts and minds of every single American. It doesn't matter where you live. I've been in 23 states in the last 7 or 8 weeks, Larry, traveling around the country. It doesn't matter whether I'm out west, upstate New York, deep south, Midwest, it's all the same. Everybody knows this is what we must do. If you don't have a secure border, you don't have sovereignty, you don't have security, you don't even really have a nation. And that's what Joe Biden has put at risk. And that's why we had to impeach Mayorkas.
And it's in your package. I mean, that's the only point I'm going to say. It's part of your legislative proposal.
We're going to move all those measures again this week. And, of course, as expected, that part will sit right on Chuck Schumer's desk. And they're going to show the American people again where their resolve is. And I think we all know.
All right. So, Speaker, another point. You mentioned Mayorkas. Both articles of the Mayorkas impeachment were voted down today. Chuck Schumer rides again. Speaking of recalcitrance, Republicans tried to put up a bunch of adjournment amendment votes, but I guess all that failed. I don't know everything there is to know, but it looks like Mayorkas is getting off scot-free. What's the next step? I mean, you don't want the issue to die, regardless of Mayorkas. Biden, you hear rumors, Mr. Speaker, that he's going to use some executive authority, 212F or 287G. I don't see anything. I don't see a darn thing. In fact, I don't see anything on sanctions against Iran, and I don't see anything about sanctions to close our border.
No, and that's why we put sanctions in the legislation here to go after Iran and China and Russia, because the White House is not doing that. And on the border, look, I've been telling the president since the day I got the gavel. I mean, literally the next morning, October 26, we met at the White House, and we talked about the border. And we've been talking about it with his staff and with him and everybody in his orbit ever since. We're demanding that they use that executive authority. Larry, I delivered to the president myself a menu of 8 executive actions that he could take under existing federal law. And he acts as though he has no ability to do that, or he doesn't believe it's true. It's nonsense. It's right there in the black letter law. He does not want to close the border. And that's clear to everybody. Why, everybody asked me around the country? Well, I think we know. They want to turn them into voters. They want to affect the outcome of the decennial census in a couple of years. If they can distribute illegals, and we think it may be as many as 16 million that are in the country now, around the country strategically, they would meet that objective. And that is something that we must combat, and that's what House Republicans are absolutely committed to do on behalf of the American people.
Well, Mr. Speaker, another point I just want to ask you about. Have some fun here. You're so great with your time. You're so gracious with your time. So inflation's a big issue. Jay Powell's thrown in the towel. There are not going to be any rate cuts this year because inflation is actually getting worse this year than it did last year. You talked about the border problem and law and order and the crime associated with it, as Mr. Trump has. I got another one for you. Joe Biden on tax day, which was Monday, as you know, Joe Biden decided that raising taxes is a much better economic growth and opportunity approach than cutting taxes, and says the Trump tax cuts just benefited a few wealthy people. I thought it benefited almost every nook and cranny of the economy. Now, can the House do anything, you know, the Kudlow catechism, the Laffer catechism on supply side tax cuts, at least stir the pot, at least, you know, tickle us just a little bit? Because I always thought lower taxes was a better idea than higher taxes, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, you're trying to apply way too much common sense for Washington. You know, Larry, in the House Republicans, we've got the smallest majority in U.S. history, a one-vote margin. We're using that because the Republicans are 100% united on this idea. You lower the tax burden on the American people in order to spur on the economy, more investment, job growth, and more economic opportunity for more people. We've done that. We showed it. You know, I came in when President Trump did. You were in the administration in 2017. I got to Congress the same year. And, wow, we did an extraordinary job. You helped engineer that. We had the greatest economy in the history of the world, Larry, not just the U.S., right before COVID. I mean, everyone was doing better. Why? Because we went back to the basic principles. We cut taxes and we cut regulation dramatically on that latter count. And that's what allowed the economy to boom again. It's not rocket science. These are policy choices. We got to get back to it.
Speaker Johnson, you're very gracious for your time. Congrats on the package. I hope the whole thing works out for you. And we'll talk soon. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, my friend.
All right.
Good to see you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We got Mark Simone. We got Joe Concha. And if that weren't enough, we have Liz Peek in addition to all that up next on Kudlow. That was a very clear-headed Speaker Mike Johnson. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Mornings with Maria on Fox Business.
Every morning, I want to empower my viewers to move their families forward and seize the day.
All the news that drives the markets and beyond. Mornings with Maria on Fox Business. Invested in you.
Now, some of you might have pets at home to take care of when hurricanes hit, but what about our zoos or animal sanctuaries, like here at Flamingo Gardens, where they have hundreds to take care of when the storms come?
We hate using the H word around here. We've been spared pretty good here, you know, recently.
A good thing for Michael Ruggieri and over 400 animals that live at Flamingo Gardens.
We're home to permanently injured Florida native wildlife. When they go through our rehab center, if the injuries were so severe that it would never really heal correctly and could be released in the wild, we can give it a permanent home.
Instead of lions and tigers and bears, it's more like flamingos, bald eagles, and peacocks, even talking crows. When the H word does come around, keeping these guys safe is the focus. 33 years in at the sanctuary, Michael has experienced many of them, including Andrew.
Irma, she did a lot of damage too. She took down a couple of our champion trees. One of them was considered about the tallest tree in the peninsula of Florida.
So when systems approach and it's time to shelter the animals,
we have to literally catch each one.
Flamingos, they went into the ladies' room.
Bird of preys and all my educational animals that are glove trained and handleable, those were all put in crates and they were put into administration. My eagles and all that were actually put in crates and put into the gallery. Now we have a brand new build in our learning center, which is a fortress.
Costing $1.6 million and made to withstand major hurricanes.
It actually looks like wood, but it's actually concrete, so it has a good seal to it. Now we're going to be able to put all our animals into one location and we're all going to feel very secure.
Let's hope it won't be needed soon, but when it is, he'll look to the forecast and animals to get things started.
A lot of times I pay attention to the ibis, and if all the ibis take off and they're gone, that means the hurricane's going to hit you. And then after the hurricane comes through, they're one of the first birds to come back to the area.
Then recovery starts, and residents will be returned to their habitats among the Everglades and Flamingo Gardens.
Yeah.
I always talked about it as a child.
I have been thinking about this since I was 7 years old.
My dad will say I was 12 years old when I came in and said I wanted to be an astronaut.
I've wanted to be an astronaut basically as long as I can remember.
A dream for some, decades in the making. NASA's newest astronauts now have their spacesuits.
First time you put that on and you're getting in the water, it's impressive. You just feel this, you've made it almost in some way.
It gave me shivers.
I was like, I'll never forget that.
The class of scientists, doctors, engineers, and researchers were chosen 2 years ago from over 12,000 applicants. After making the cut, they moved here to Houston and have been training physically and mentally for their first space flight.
We learned about the space station systems. We learned to speak a little bit of Russian. We learned how to fly the T-38. We do spacesuit training in the neutral buoyancy lab. And then we learned how to operate the Canadian arm, the robotic arm that's on the space station right now.
Now it's time to report to their jobs in the astronaut office.
There's so much in front of us right now, like whether it's a Starliner flight or a Dragon flight or getting to work on a development program or work current operations with what's going on the space station right now. There's really not a bad job in the astronaut office.
And they're preparing to take that office to space.
The science that we're doing on the International Space Station, there's nowhere else in the universe that we can do that science. So we're learning things about medicines, about the human body, that space gives us a laboratory to work in that we don't have on the ground.
The Johnson Space Center director says it'll be at least a year before we see any of these astronauts head to outer space. And if you're interested in becoming an astronaut, the new applications for the next class are now open. At the Johnson Space Center, Joy Addison, Fox News.
The Evening Edit with Elizabeth McDonald.
One of the biggest goals of the show is to look out for Americans. We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories. The Evening Edit on Fox Business. Invested in you.
All right, let's talk about politics. Let's talk about Donald Trump going to carry the state of New York in the general election. How much fun is that? Joining me now is Mark Simone, WOR radio show host, Joe Concha, Fox News contributor, and Liz Peek, Syndicate Commons, Fox News contributor. So, Mr. Trump, he lost by 5.6 percentage points, roughly 300,000 votes. That was Lee Zeldin lost in the last election, which ain't bad. Here's Mr. Trump talking about it yesterday when he was up in Harlem visiting a bodega.
This city, I love this city, and it's gone so bad in the last 3 years, 4 years, and we're going to straighten New York out. So running for president, we're putting a big hit on New York. We think we can win New York.
So, Liz Peek, I'll start with you. While the New York political establishment from the White House on down actually is trying to railroad and weaponize him and put him in jail for 700 years. There he is up at a bodega doing some good and talking to the folks and getting a heck of a good reception. I know it's smart. What do you make of it?
I think it's ambitious, optimistic, but I'll tell you what, he's going to do pretty well in New York compared to the past, I'm guessing, because New Yorkers are so frustrated. And all the issues that Donald Trump is campaigning on resonate here. The border, our city is overrun by people here illegally. And by the way, I talked to three Hispanics today who are going to vote for Donald Trump. Why?
Really?
Because their neighborhoods are being trashed by all these people who are here illegally. They're bringing drug trading, all the things that they don't want in their neighborhoods. I can't tell you how offended people, Hispanics who are here legally are by what's going on at the southern border, Larry. It is a real problem. For Joe Biden, I think. I hope. And by the way, I thought Donald Trump going up to Harlem and getting that, feeding into that wellspring of frustration and anger was completely brilliant.
Just like Joe Biden going to the Rockettes in Radio City Music Hall and not raising all that much money compared to what Trump raised, and Trump going out to Long Island to be in the wake of that four tragic cop who was killed by an illegal criminal. Joe Concha, I think he wants to do a rally in Madison Square Garden, and then he's going to do one in Yankee Stadium.
Wow.
If you told me,
I just want to throw that out there.
If you told me, say, January 7, 2021, that he had plans to do that while he's running for president, I would say you were crazy. Mm-hmm. Now, after seeing that reception in Harlem, just like we saw at that Chick-fil-A down mm-hmm. in Atlanta, mm-hmm. if you watch other networks, he should have been driven out by protesters, mm-hmm. all saying we can't be around this person. He was warmly embraced in both of those places. And we talked about this before. This is bringing back memories of Ronald Reagan going to Harlem before an election when people thought that that was crazy. And it turned out that it was a good strategy. Overall, will Donald Trump win New York? Probably not. But other states that people aren't talking about right now, like Virginia, for example, is probably very much in play. Joe Biden is underwater in almost every state in this country, including New York. So while maybe he could pull it out because that's just how New York votes, he may have to spend more money and more time in places he didn't expect to. That's the whole thing.
That is a big deal.
He'll tie Biden down. That's exactly right. And cause him to spend some of that Radio City Music Hall Rockette money. Mark Simon, I'm going to have you come in a minute. I got another quote. On the trial and a reverse effect. Hold on a second. Here comes some more Trump.
Every legal scholar, every legal pundit said there should be no trial. This is not, there was nothing done wrong. This is all politics. This is coming out of the White House. We're doing better now than we've ever done. So I think it's having a reverse effect. You know what? All I want is fairness.
I love that. We want Trump in the background. Mark Simon, what do you make of this trial?
Well, you know, they had the jury fill out a detailed questionnaire about any possible bias. They should have had the judge fill out a questionnaire. I don't know why they didn't do that. Democrats should watch that video, the bodega visit. They will be terrified. That crowd is chanting for him. They're cheering for him. This is in Harlem, where it should be a Democratic neighborhood. They love Trump up there. He's going to do this all the time. He's going to go to a different crime site, a different disaster, migrant center, do these appearances.
By the way, they brought it among themselves, treating him so badly, not even letting him go to his son's graduation down in South Florida. But the point is, I was looking at some polls. People don't think he was guilty. I think most people sort of scratch their head, including legal scholars. I mean, not just Jonathan Turley, but a lot of legal scholars across the board. I don't mean to exclude Jonathan's a smart guy, but you've got left of center people that sort of scratch their head. What is he being tried for? We don't know.
You know, the non-disclosure agreement, they call it hush money to make it sound bad, is perfectly legal.
Bloomberg admits personal payment. What is wrong with a personal? Something, by the way, lawyers, I mean, I'm not even sure Trump knew. He probably just said, go on ahead and do this. Take care of this for me. Yeah. This is what happens when you're a big business guy.
You remember the debate? Bloomberg had to admit he'd signed dozens of these hush money agreements with women.
That's very telling.
Trump said, this is what you call it. You call it a legal expense. You're writing the check, the lawyer, he's doing a document. It's a legal expense.
Liz Peek, I'm not advocating it. I'm just saying it's very hard to figure this out, particularly in light of the fact that there's supposed to be a federal election crime involved. They can't name it in the indictment. And furthermore, the Federal Election Commission looked at this and rejected this.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit like, remember during the financial crisis, you had those financial instruments that were all kind of tiered one on the other, and all of a sudden it turned out there was nothing there and they all collapsed. Mm. Those multi-layered financial instruments? That's kind of what this is. You have 39 misdemeanors that can only become translated into felonies if there is an attached felony. Mm. But as you point out, no one has been able to discover the attached felony. And by the way, if you don't give that to the other team for discovery, then it's really not, you're not playing correctly, you're not legally properly behaving. I mean, this is all just baloney.
Even
honestly,
Democrats wouldn't look at it. Sidebands.
Well, the New York Times called it creative. It's more than creative. It's completely...
Joe Concha, I'm going to do this as a carom shot because Liz Peek wrote this really tough piece. It's playing at the top of Fox News Digital.
Yes.
It says Marjorie Taylor Greene is an idiot. Now, she didn't do the headline. She just wrote the piece. But you saw Speaker Johnson. We interviewed him for a while. Mm-hmm. Covered the waterfront. What did you think? What was your honest appraisal?
authentic and just no nonsense.
Yes.
In other words, he's not there to put on a show.
Yes.
He's not there to go viral. He's saying, here are our problems. Here's what I can do within my limits. And this is what we're going to try to do moving forward. The bottom line is that Republicans, if they had a larger majority, then they could ram through some of the things that they want. They don't have that. So he has to compromise. So whether it was Kevin McCarthy or Speaker Johnson or whoever else may be after him, if Marjorie Taylor Greene and that aspect of the Republican Party kicks him out, nothing will change because the numbers aren't there.
I happen to like Marjorie Taylor Greene quite a bit, but putting that aside, he's doing what he can do. I mean, he made that very clear. He does not have a bulletproof majority in the House for sure.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any majority in the Senate for second sure. He's got the foreign funding is in this, but he's got the border bill in this also. He's got the close the border stuff from H.R. 2, and he's got some election reform in this. And he's even trying to do some sanctions on China and Iran, which, of course, the Bidens refused to do because they're worried about gasoline prices. I mean, I don't have any sympathy with people that want to replace him. I just don't see it. What exactly are you going to change, get, who, why, where?
You listen to New York Sports Radio, right? And forever,
I do periodically.
Before Aaron Rodgers, you always heard about, we got to replace this Jets quarterback. Okay, who's your option then behind him? How does the team get better? In other words, who's behind Mike Johnson? Marjorie Taylor Greene then should offer up to be the speaker. Let her get in there and let's see how that goes, because nothing is going to change because the numbers aren't there. They don't have the Senate and they don't have the numbers in the House. So what are we talking about here?
Liz, you'd be for Marjorie Taylor Greene for speaker.
No. I mean, but to your point, she doesn't have a candidate that she's backing, and that was the case when Kevin McCarthy was thrown out, too.
Yeah.
The people who threw him out, Matt Gaetz in particular, he didn't have a candidate who could win the consensus, the majority vote. I mean, this is a democracy. This is how it works, folk. If she doesn't like the bills that are going out, she votes against them. That's what she's got. She's got one district in Georgia that's plus 22. That's her big selling point. It's not a big group of people. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Shut up. And by the way, when Donald Trump came out and said he supported Michael Johnson, that should have been enough for all these people who are backbenchers. They should have said, okay, we're going to make this work because that's the game.
Everybody's a rhino.
Mark Simone, you're taking the over or the under on Trump carrying New York State?
Reagan did it twice. Mm-hmm. Trump is a guy who does things that could you imagine a private citizen running for president and winning? He's done the impossible before. He'll do it this time.
You're taking the over. I love it.
Save the tape.
Mark Simone.
Going under.
Joe Conscious. Save the tape. I'm Kudlow. Coming up next, former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who is very optimistic about Republicans winning the House, the Senate, and the White House. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories.
We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
The Evening Edit on Fox Business, invested in you.
Sensible saying. What is the most sensible thing you have ever heard someone say? It's kind of interesting because not really the best advice you ever got. It's what's the most sensible thing that maybe you use and you tell other people, and it's kind of one of those mantras that you have adopted and you use again and again. Randy Economy, thoughts on this?
This is a no-brainer. My grandfather and my dad, you know, my grandfather's a Greek immigrant, and my father, when I was a little kid, he'd always say to me, Randy, people are no damn good, and politicians are even worse. So I've got to say that would be right out of the ballpark, and it's still true today.
Right out of the ballpark.
Right out of the ballpark.
Marianne Rafferty, do you have you have something that you love?
You don't really need those high heels. Just put on the comfortable shoes.
Well, who said this to you?
My husband.
Really?
Oh.
He was my producer.
I
remember. When I first started with
Fox. He was my producer as well, and he never said that to me. Just so we're...
Did you wear the high heels?
I didn't, but, you know, I would like boots every once in a while. He said, okay, Gallagher, get those off. We got to go hiking. Kevin Cork, your thoughts on this?
Wait a day. That's been the most sensible advice I've ever gotten. I have saved so much money on things that I really thought I wanted. I was really hot to trot to have. I was taught, wait a day. If you really, really want it, it'll be there tomorrow. It has saved me a lot of time and effort.
Do you want to name the person who kind of gave you that bit of advice?
Oh, Mama Cork, Barbara.
Oh, Mama Cork. Well, God bless Mama Cork. It's good advice. Jennifer Griffin, by the way, tonight's cameo. She had thoughts on this. Look.
Oh, that's easy, Trace. To quote Will Ferrell's father, Reese Bobby, in Talladega Nights, you don't drive with your eyes, you drive with your heart.
You do drive with your heart. Roxanne Hose, your thoughts.
My mom had a good one. No matter how upset or tired or angry you are, just go have a shower. Water washes away all the bad stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And someone once told me, you will never be younger than you are right now. So live it up. They also show up, do the work, and time will recognize your efforts.
This is Crescent, a great hornbill bird getting a new lease on life thanks to 3D printing technology. Staff at Zoo Tampa in Florida noticed Crescent was developing skin cancer on a portion of her beak called the casque and sprung into action.
When this is diagnosed in hornbills, it is unfortunately a death sentence. It will eat away at their beak.
Veterinarian Kendra Baker discovered crews in Singapore used a 3D printer to replace the beak of a great hornbill overseas and reached out to biomedical engineers in the U.S. for help, getting Massachusetts-based 3D printing company Form Labs to design a new piece of beak and a template for surgeons to use during the operation.
They were able to create this 3D surgical guide, and it fits right over the edge here. And so what that does is it's essentially a stencil.
The 3D printed pieces needed to be 100% accurate. The section of Crescent's beak containing the cancer also housed her sinuses, setting the stage for a complex and delicate procedure.
It has little screw holes here, and we attached it to her casque just like that. And we put dental acrylic to seal the edges, and then we screwed everything into place.
Thankfully, everything fit like a glove, and Zoo Tampa says Crescent is quickly bouncing back to health. And while 3D printing helped save Crescent, the technology is also being used to create prosthetic limbs for humans, as scientists even explore the possibility of using cells to print vital organs in the future. Jackie Ibanez, Fox News.
Hello to our fans watching in Bosnia and Herzegovina on MTEL. Thank you for choosing Fox. Keep it right here.
All right, a few days ago, headline in the New York Sun, Speaker McCarthy predicts victory for Trump, a Republican boost in the House, and a Senate flip in November. The aforementioned Kevin McCarthy is here. I love an optimist. I love a bull, and I love Kevin McCarthy. Kevin, so... listen, you're very optimistic. Give us a couple thoughts on this. Let's begin with Mr. Trump.
Well, I'm optimistic because that's what the data shows. Let's go back to the last election. President Biden won that election by 48,918 votes. So if you take the polling from then and compare it to today, President Trump is really at the exact same place he was then. The difference is, President Biden was plus 10 favorability then. He's minus 20 now. Mm. I think if the election was today, it wouldn't even be close. President Trump would win bigger. You're seeing it when you're even talking about New York. You're not mentioning Michigan. You're not mentioning Pennsylvania, Arizona, or Georgia. President Trump has been leading in those swing states for a number of months. And now we're looking at Black American percentage, up to 22%. If President Trump gets above 13%, Democrats will never win the White House. And you look at his growth with Hispanic voters. We've watched that in Congress, winning the districts along the border. We were the first party ever to have a Mexican-born individual elected to Congress. Mm. I mean, this is a unique situation here, and it grows. Now, the Senate has a much different map. They're not all up at once. They only need to win one seat, but think about it. Manchin and Sinema are not running for re-election. Mm. You look at Ohio in the swing. We've got, and you look at Montana. We've got really good candidates. And I want to give a lot of credit to Senator Daines. He's done a really good job running the senatorial committee. Yeah. He's paid attention in the primaries. Now, when you look at the House, I've been fortunate. I've been leader for 5 years, and we've won every single cycle. Mm. When President Biden was on the ticket, last time. It was the first time since 1994 not one Republican incumbent lost. And remember, I picked up 5 seats in California, 5 in New York, in Oregon, in Arizona, all places Republicans were losing. But today, the numbers are better. It's easier to win seats in the House this cycle than the last two. Remember, the Democrats tried to redistrict New York. They didn't do very well. Right. They tried Wisconsin. They didn't get to do that. North Carolina had redistricting, and 3 Democrat incumbents didn't even run for reelection. So you pick up 3 seats there. Democrats got another seat in Alabama. So we've got a little competitiveness, but it looks chaotic in Congress right now. The only way Republicans in the House don't maintain their majority or grow is themselves. Because of the chaos, the money has dropped significantly, which hurts. The Democrats have a money advantage now. When we were in the minority, we were able to raise more money than them in the majority.
Well, I think I think it's important. And I think Mike Johnson is doing this. Keep the focus on Biden and Schumer, Democratic policies. I think he's got it. If he stays with that, Kevin. But, Kevin, it's really, I'm glad to hear your optimism. I was going to say one footnote. We're running out of time. But I know Larry Hogan in Maryland, Governor Hogan. I know he's a liberal Republican, but he's a Republican. He's a Republican. And he'll line up on the Republican side. And that's going to be, that could be, in, you could wind up with a 3-4 seat Senate majority in the Senate. Last 15 seconds.
I'm a big supporter of Larry Hogan. You know, he won re-election as governor and again. I don't call him a liberal Republican. I call him a common sense Republican. This guy's conservative on issues as well. But remember, he represents his state. He governs. He governs in a manner that his state wants. That changes. This is a chess game. Democrats will have to spend millions to try to defeat him. And that is a whole new game when you expand the playing field even further.
An optimistic Kevin McCarthy. Wonderful to see you, Kevin. Thank you ever so much. Folks, I'll be right back with the last word. Please stick around.
The maker of the Grand Theft Auto franchise is handing out game over notices to employees. Take-Two Interactive Software said it will lay off about 5% of its workforce. It's also scrapping some games and projects as it looks to save about $165 million a year. A recent filing shows Tesla CEO Elon Musk continues to receive no compensation for his role. But the electric vehicle maker plans to ask shareholders once again to approve a $56 billion pay package for Musk. It was struck down by a Delaware judge earlier this year. The judge said Musk had extensive ties with the people drawing up the 2018 compensation package that she rejected. Red Lobster is considering filing for bankruptcy. Bloomberg reporting people familiar with the talks say the chain is weighing a Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing to deal with rising labor costs and renegotiate burdensome leases. They say no final decisions have been made, and a new study finds a small biz boom, with more and more business owners being women and minorities, according to payroll firm Gusto. A record 5.5 million new business applications were filed last year. Women made up 49% of the new owners surveyed. That's business in New York. I'm Madison Allworth.
Look at the nice hot fire here at the Smokers at Killen's Barbecue down here in Pearland, Texas. The thing that's killing them these days is the price of beef. Ronnie Killen is arguably the king of Texas barbecue. What do you got that you're smoking right now, by the way?
We have a little pork ribs, and we have a little smoked prime rib. That's a ribeye roll. And then we have some beef ribs and a little brisket, and then a little turkey breast back here.
It's the beef, though, that's really the problem.
That's for sure. I mean, beef prices for the past 3 years have been kind of crazy, but, you know, now they're just kind of like at an all-time high. But for us, we just try to utilize every part of it and make stocks out of the bones and, you know,
being a little more efficient with the meet.
Efficient and creative and trying to be the best we can be so we can give a good, you know, cost per value for the guest.
The reason for the problem with the price of beef is, you know, herds had been reduced down here. You had a terrible drought in Texas.
It was terrible. I mean, 3 months, I mean, everything was dead. I mean, you know, the grass is dead. And it's like people, you know, farmers have to take and, you know, supplement, you know, feed and everything for the lack of grass. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's, and plus it was just so, you know, the heat and everything, how hot it is. I mean, it's you know, a lot of cattle die.
Before we get away here, and as we look maybe back at that, well, that's a great piece of beef right there. I don't know, maybe, Roger, that's, you can get a picture of that. That's a few dollars there.
It's expensive, but it's almost, brisket is almost more expensive. It's more expensive than that.
Yeah. Price is up, but people still seem to be eating.
Absolutely. We, you know, we're busier and busier, and, you know, I think it is because we haven't raised the prices where, you know, you can take a household and they can't eat out because it's just too expensive. We haven't priced ourselves out of that, you know, the market.
Yeah. Maybe autos and houses with the high interest rates, prices up, driving people out of the market. Not so much at the barbecue plate. I'm Jeff Locke with the Fox Business Network in Pearland, Texas.
When news breaks.
And we begin with this Fox News alert.
America turns to Fox News Channel.
We are feeling the impact all across the country.
Stream it now on the Fox News International app. It's the place for top political coverage.
It's a very big day here at the White House.
With must-see insight and analysis you won't get anywhere else.
We will never be the media mob.
And stay on top of the U.S. markets with Fox Business. Watch your favorite shows live or get them on demand. Download the Fox News International app now from the Apple or Google Play stores. Also available on Amazon Fire.
Just saying, it's time to slam down the China-Iran oil trade. And you know what? If you have to do it, double or triple the tariffs on all Chinese exports to the United States.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.